I like songs that edify me. Teach me your ways, Yahuwah. Unite my heart to walk in your ways. Yes, and I will walk in your truth. Okay, we've been going through Genesis. We're about Genesis chapter 25 and verse 5. And Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac, but unto the sons of the concubines. And you see there the word concubine is plural. So, and we also know that he had Keturah, another wife that he had taken. And Abraham had, he gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while he yet lived. So he's making preparations here eastward into the east country. And these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 175 years. And you add that up, that's 175 years that Abraham lived. And verse 8, chapter 25, then Abraham gave up the ghost and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre, the field which Abraham purchased of the sons of Heth. And there was Abraham buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass, after the death of Abraham, that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well Laharoi. Now these are the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bore unto Abraham. And these are the names of the sons of Ishmael, by their names, according to their generations, the firstborn of Ishmael, Nebajoth, and Kedar, and Adbeel, and Mibsam, and Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadar, Tema, Jeter, Naphish, and Kedemah. These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names, by their towns, and by their castles, 12 princes according to their nations. And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he gave up the ghost and died, and was gathered unto his people. And they dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is before Egypt, as thou goest toward Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begot Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian, of Padan-Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated Yahuwah for his wife, because she was barren. And Yahuwah was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of Yahuwah. And Yahuwah said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from the bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Well, when Yahuwah, when our Creator tells you something like that, you don't forget it. And as we'll see, that Rebekah never forgot it. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, Genesis 25, verse 24, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over, like a hairy garment. So we have this hairy red baby. And they called his name Esau. And of course, I'll bet you know what Esau means. It means, some people say it means red. But it could mean hairy. I don't get an exact definition here. And after that came out his brother, and his hand took on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob, which means, well, it says heel catcher or supplanter. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bore them. So it's like 20 years later, and you can see why he's there praying for children. It's, 40 years old when they got married, when he took Rebekah to wife, and 20 years later, their prayers are answered, and they have twins. 60 years old, okay. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man, dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And, you know, there's that guy when you have a barbecue or that always has the barbecue or always brings the meat. And everybody loves that, don't they? So that's kind of Isaac. You know, he has a special affinity for Esau because he's always bringing him the meat. He's going out hunting, bringing the venison in. And that means, you know, it's barbecue time. It's party time. And you can see the charm and the draw that Esau has, what kind of personality he has. And he has a personality to go with it, too. You know, he's the macho hunter type. He goes out and he, you know, brings home the slab of meat. And everybody's happy when they see him coming with that, with the venison or whatever he's caught, you know, over his shoulder as he's coming in. So it says that Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison. But Rebekah loved Jacob. And I bet you that that word from Yahuwah had a lot to do with her special affinity for Jacob. And Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And that means that Jacob was cooking, you know, something in the pot. Esau comes in from the field, and he's probably dragging in his venison, you know, after a hard day of hunting. Maybe he caught nothing, I don't know, but he was terribly hungry, okay, so that he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with some of that red pottage, for I am faint." Therefore his name is called Edom. And so I don't know what Edom means. I don't get a definition for Edom, but it has something to do with him being faint or selling his birthright. But anyway, so he gets another name, Edom. So Esau and Edom are the same. So when you hear of the Edomites, well, they are the children of Esau, the lineage of Esau. Esau and Edom are the same. And Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I am to the point to die. What profit shall this birthright do to me?" Well, the birthright in this case was a whole lot more than just becoming the head of the clan, taking on the responsibility of the clan. We're talking about the looking forward to the promised seed, the Redeemer, the Messiah. That's what we're talking about here. Remember, Adam and Eve were looking forward, and everyone down the line was looking forward to the promised Redeemer that would come through the seed of the woman. They all knew. Everyone knew, and I would say Esau had to know too, or maybe he was too busy out hunting in the field, and maybe he wasn't paying attention. You know, when I think back to my childhood, and how ignorant I was, even though I spent many hours sitting in a Catholic church. Though I can't ever say that I was a Catholic because I had no idea what Catholicism was. They didn't teach me anything. I didn't know who Jesus was or that God even had a son. It tells me everything I need to know about Catholicism. And probably spent most of my childhood not even ever going to Catholic church, but I'm sure I was in there, you know, perhaps 100 times throughout my childhood and had no clue. And because of my relatives and my mother was Catholic, I don't think my father was anything. He was irreligious, if anything. And most of my relatives were pretty much the same way. And so how did we get to that? Well, okay, there's a little side trail there for you. But anyway, Esau probably never paid attention. His mind was probably on other things when it came to the telling of the tale of the seed line and the lineage and the looking forward to the Messiah. He was probably much like I was as a child. Didn't care, off in dreamland, whatever, I don't know. So Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. So anyway, Jacob said, I skipped a verse there, because Esau says, "Oh, what profit is this birthright to me?" He wasn't concerned about it. You know what? I've been very hungry to the point of fainting before. But would I trade eternal life for to feed my flesh? You know, this gets to what we were talking about the other day at the event where Abraham was going to sacrifice Isaac, you know, and we were talking about, what would you do? What would cause you to get the mark of the beast? Going hungry yourself? Can't buy or sell or trade. How are you going to get food? Can't feed your family? How could you justify it? I mean, there will be 1,001 good justifications for getting the mark. And people will comfort themselves by this. I did it for my children. I did it for this. I did it for that. I didn't want to lose my house. Didn't want to lose my car. I had to make my car payment. Oh, I made contracts. And if I didn't take the mark of the beast, well, I couldn't fulfill my contracts. I'd be a liar. I'd be a truce breaker. And people will justify it. Many, many ways. People do justify it. Many, many ways. When confronted with the information that they have a mark of the beast, they want to continue using it, so they justify it. And some of you know what I'm talking about. And some of you are going to learn. Just stick around. And you'll learn. So justify it. So here Esau easily justifies giving up his birthright, giving up the promised Redeemer. It doesn't mean that much to him. See, he doesn't know what he's lost, obviously. Adam and Eve knew what they lost. They lost eternal life. They gained death, and they wanted to throw off death. So they, by faith, lived a life of obedience, looking forward to the promised Messiah. And so did all of their sons through Noah, and then through Shem, and up until Abraham here, and now Isaac was looking forward, carried on the faith of his fathers. But Esau didn't care. He had everything he wanted. He was well regarded. Everybody loved Esau. He was the guy who brought the meat for the barbecue. And when he showed up from the field, it was party time. But it don't look like it was party time today. He may have come in with nothing because he's very hungry. It doesn't tell us whether he's carrying a slab of meat or not. But here he is. He's about to faint. And he says, man, my birthright, the birthright is nothing compared to my hunger. I am a man of appetite. That's what he's saying. My appetite is more valuable than anything else. God forbid that I should have to go hungry or that I should have to wait. So he does it. He said, what good's a birthright? And Jacob says, swear to me this day. And he swore unto him. And he sold his birthright to Jacob for a mess of pottage. And I would submit that that's what most people have done. America, we have a birthright. And it's written down in something called the Declaration of Independence. The unanimous declaration of, well, independence. And it says that all men are created equal. Well, if all men are created equal, why do I have to go to another man for a license? Is that license going to allow me to do something which is unlawful? Well, if it's not unlawful, why do I need a license? I'll tell you why I need a license. Because I don't own myself. All men aren't created equal. I've sold myself, or I've given the ownership of myself over to someone else. And now I have to ask their permission to go here, go there, to travel on the public ways. Yes, we have a birthright here. And you know what? We need to enforce. We need to take back our birthright. If we make an agreement, yes, we need to keep the agreement. If we've made a bad agreement, which most of us have, or somehow our parents made an agreement for us and we're living in it, if there's a way out, and I believe there is a way out of a lot of these agreements, all you have to do is search out the agreement, the law of the contract, and you find your way out. Because that's what Paul said. He says, are you a slave? Well, then serve as unto the Lord. But if you can be made free, rather use it. So if there's a way out, if you can be made free, get out. Become free. And that's what Paul says. Well, that's the road I've chosen, to become unentangled with all of those voluntary contracts that were made for me or that I made in ignorance by following the blind out there, leading the blind. So Jacob, he had just bought the birthright for a bowl of red pottage or lentils. And Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink, and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Chapter 26. And there was a famine in the land, beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, into Gerar. So Abimelech is still alive at this time, so many years later, and this is like 60-some years later. Perhaps it's Abimelech's son, but you never know. And Yahuwah appeared unto him and said, "Go not down into Egypt, dwell in a land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and I will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform an oath which I swore to Abraham, thy father. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of the heaven, and I will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed." So, you know, this is the same promise that was given to Abraham, that was given to Isaac, and this is the seed. The seed, the promised seed of the Redeemer. That's what he's referring to here, and not the literal physical seed of Israel, Jacob. "Because that Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws, he says, I'll make your seed to multiply as the stars of the heaven, give unto thee thy seed all these countries, and this seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws, and Isaac dwelt in Gerar. And the men of the place asked him of his wife, and he said, she is my sister. For he feared to say, she is my wife, lest, he said, the men of that place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon." That's a familiar story, isn't it? "And it came to pass, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, Behold, of a surety, she is thy wife. And how saidest thou, she is my sister? And Isaac said unto him, Because I said, lest I die for her. And Abimelech says, What is this that you have done unto us? One of the people might lightly have lain with thy wife, and thou shouldest have brought guiltiness upon us. And Abimelech charged all the people, saying, He that touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. And Isaac sowed in that land and received in the same year 100-fold, and Yahuwah blessed him. And the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great, for he had possessions of flocks, possessions of herds, and great store of servants, and the Philistines envied him for all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham, his father. The Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth. And Abimelech said to Isaac, Go from us, for thou art much mightier than we. And Isaac departed from thence and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac digged again the wells of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham. And he called their names after the names by which his father had called them. And Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water. And the herdsmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, The water is ours. And he called the name of the well Esek, because they strove with him. And they digged another well and strove for that also. And he called the name of it Sitnah. And he removed from thence and digged another well, and for that they strove not. And he called the name of it Rehoboth. And he said, For now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. And he went up from thence to Beersheba. And it goes to show you just the character of this man. Okay. He, like, turn the other cheek. I'll go dig another well. And he digs another well, and they want that one too, and he digs another well. Well, how much can you take? Well, they finally left him alone. And he went up from thence to Beersheba. And Yahuwah appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee, and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. And he built an altar there and called upon the name of Yahuwah and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants digged a well. Then Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Ahazath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. And Isaac said unto them, Wherefore come you to me, seeing ye hate me, and have sent me away from you? And they said, We saw certainly that Yahuwah was with thee, and we said, Let there be now an oath between us, even between us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee. And you see how easily the word hate is used here, seeing you hate me. You know, if you send me away, you don't want me around anymore. Is that hatred? Well, it's the opposite of embracing. So it's just action. Hatred is an action. It's what you do. You know, it's like I have a wife, one of my wives, says she doesn't hate me, or said she didn't hate me. But what she did was hatred. And that can't be denied. But she's talking about a feeling. You know, because the world has reduced love and hate to just feelings. That's what romance does. It reduces love to a feeling rather than the action that you take. Because what you do is love, and what you do is hate. And if you do hate, then you hate. And if you do love, then you love. It has little to do with emotion. Emotion can accompany it, but emotion does not define love and hate. Love and hate are verbs. They're in action. Okay, well, we'll be back in a few minutes. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Cross the Border.